I'm delighted you've made it your decision to be with us tonight, and I hope you've got your Bible with you and are eager to study. Be turning to 1 Kings chapter 20, if you will, and that'd be the place for our study this evening. 1 Kings chapter 20. As we come to the last service of this meeting, I want to take just a moment to again express my appreciation to the church here for inviting me to come and be with you this week, for the hospitality that you've shown, either having me in your home for a meal or taking me out to eat. And I know that time and expense goes into either of those, and I appreciate so much the hospitality that you have shown. Appreciate the kind way in which you've listened, the kind comments that you've made about the studies, and I hope that you've been encouraged and helped somehow as we've studied together. It's been a real pleasure to be with the Hans this week and have known them for a good long while from the days in which I was in the Louisville area back in the 1980s. But anyway, it's good to be with them again, and I appreciate so much the stand they have taken and the work that they've done, and I wish them well and wish you well in the work in the kingdom. Let's open our Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 20, if you will. 1 Kings chapter 20. This chapter deals with a war between Israel and Syria. The kings that are leading the battle are Ahab for leading for Israel, and Ben-Hadad is the king of Syria. In verses 1 to 6, Ben-Hadad challenges Ahab. In verse 1, we're not going to read every verse. We're going to get the gist of these verses to set the pace for our study tonight. But there were 32 kings that gathered together under his leadership, and he came and he besieged Samaria and made war against it, according to verse 1. And he sent messengers to the city to Ahab, the king of Israel, and here's what he said. Your silver and your gold are mine, your loveliest wives and children are mine. In other words, I'm going to take it all. And according to verse 4, the king of Israel answered and said, Oh, my Lord, just as you say, I and all that I have are yours. Then the messengers came and said, Thus speaks Ben-Hadad. Saying, indeed, I have sent to you, saying, you shall deliver to me your silver and your gold, your wives and your children. But I will send my servants to you tomorrow about this time, that they may search your house and the houses of your servants. And it shall be that whatever is pleasant to your eyes, that it shall be put in their hands, and I take it. So he challenges him by telling him, first, here's what I'm going to do. And then he sends more messengers, which is requiring more the second time. Now in verses 7 through 9, this time he refuses. At first, Ahab seems to want to pacify him according to verse 4, but he refuses him this time. He goes to the elders of the country, or of the city, of the land, according to verse 7, and he said, This man makes trouble, and he sent to me and asked for my wives and my children, my silver and my gold, and I did not deny him. But the elders said to him, Do not listen or consent. Therefore he said to the messengers of Ben-Hadad, Tell the Lord the king, all that you sent for to your servant the first time I will do, but this thing I cannot do. And the messengers departed and brought back word to him. In other words, I'm not going to comply with your request. He refused. Now in verse 10, what Ben-Hadad promised to do was basically wipe out Israel. He said, The gods do so to me, and more also, if enough dust is left of Samaria for a handful of each of the people who follow me. I'm going to make dust of the whole nation of Israel. I'm going to wipe you off the map. And I want you to notice at verse 11 now that Ahab warns Ben-Hadad about his overconfidence. Here's what he said at verse 11. So the king of Israel answered and said, Tell him, Let not the one who puts on his armor boast like one who takes it off. I want you to read that again. You go back and you tell Ben-Hadad this. When he gives this threat, and keep in mind what he's done, he's boasting about what he would do. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If you don't comply with my command, what I'm going to do is I'm going to wipe you off the map is what I'm going to do. He's boasting about what he's going to do. Hadn't even started the battle yet. And Ahab says to him, Let not the one who puts on his armor boast like the one who takes it off. The point is, victory is not assured until the battle is over. I want us to look at that phrase. And that is this thing of the proverb, as it seems to be. He seems to be quoting a proverb. Let not the one who puts on his armor boast like the one who takes it off. Barnes observes this. He said, Ahab's reply has an air of a proverb. which the Orientals always love to answer a foe. What he's saying to him in the proverb is, the one who's putting on his armor hasn't yet fought the battle, and he's boasting about what he's going to do. He doesn't know how it's going to turn out. The one who's taking off his armor has done the battle, and he knows how it turned out. He can boast about that. It reminds us of Ecclesiastes 7 and in verse 8, the end of thing is better than the beginning, particularly in the case of a war. You can boast before the war, here's how it's going to go, and we're going to wipe them off the map. But it's easier to boast when you've already done that. We did wipe them off the map. Or perhaps this passage in Proverbs 27 and verse 1, do not boast of tomorrow. Perhaps those are parallel in thought. Or maybe our modern proverb that says, don't count your chickens before they hatch. Isn't that what he's saying? He's saying to him, don't count your chickens before they hatch, Ben-Hadad. The war isn't over yet. The battle hasn't been fought. And you're boasting before you put on your armor. Don't let the one who puts on the armor boast like the one who takes it off. The French had a proverb that said this, don't sell the skin of the bear until you kill it. How true. And that's the point that he is saying to Ben-Hadad. Let's talk this evening about don't boast before the battle. Go back to verse 11 of our context of 1 Kings chapter 20 and look at this phrase. You might underline it in your Bible. Let not him that puts on the armor boast like the one who takes it off. Don't boast before the battle. There's some practical things we learn from this in the context in which it is setting, and we'll come back to the context in just a moment. Let's begin listing some things that we learn. I learned from this that it's easy to see in others what we cannot see in ourselves. Is it easy to see in others what we cannot see in ourselves? That was true of Ahab. You see, Ahab looks at Ben-Hadad, and he can see the lack of judgment and the foolish thinking that he has. How foolish it is for a king to make promises of how it's going to turn out while he's putting on the armor rather than when he's taking it off. That is foolish. That's a lack of judgment on the part of Ben-Hadad. And Ahab can identify that. And he sees that, and yet he cannot see his own failure in following the direction of God. In this very contest, in this very battle, I notice a little bit later at verse 28 that God says to Ahab that I'm going to deliver Ben-Hadad into your hand. You're going to be victorious in this battle. Later at verse 42, the instruction was given, or the statement was made, that God had given instruction for him to kill Ben-Hadad. God wanted you to eliminate him. But beginning at verse 31 through verse 43, or 31 through verse 34 rather, he made a treaty with Ben-Hadad and he spared his life. In other words, he disobeyed God. So here is a man who can see the lack of judgment on the part of Ben-Hadad, but he has a hard time seeing until it's later identified to him that he's not obedient to God himself. He could easily see in another what he could not see in himself. We often have the same problem. We're often blinded to ourselves, what we can clearly see in other people. For example, in Matthew chapter 7, we can see the speck in someone else's eye when we can't see the beam that is in our own eye. Jesus talked about that in the context of judge not that you be not judged. That is a hypocritical judgment when I have a beam sticking out of my eye, so to speak, but I can identify quickly the speck in someone else's eye. We can easily see in others what we cannot see in ourselves. Let's go to Romans chapter 2, if you will. In Romans chapter 2, the Jews were pointing their fingers at the Gentiles, crying, oh, what sinners the Gentiles were. They're nothing but fuel for the fires of hell. When they were doing the very same thing. Look at verse 21. You who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that a man should not steal, do you not steal? And you say, do not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You say, abhor idols, do you not rob temples? In other words, you're doing the same things that others are doing, and you see what they're doing is wrong, but you can't see yourself. Sometimes we're not much better. Just go to 2 Samuel chapter 12. You remember David had committed the sin with Bathsheba. And not only had he committed the sin of adultery, but he had her husband killed. And then he took his wife for himself. And you remember how that Nathan the prophet came to David and told him about this rich man and the poor man. And the rich man took from the poor man's flock and he fixed that lamb for his wayfaring traveler. And David's anger, I'm reading it 2 Samuel 11 or 12 and in verse 5, was aroused against this man. And he said, as the Lord lives, the man who has done this shall surely die, and he shall restore it fourfold because of the thing he has done. And he had no pity. He could easily see how this man had mistreated another man. And Nathan the prophet, look at verse 7, said, you are the man. David could see in someone else what he could not see in himself. That's like Ahab here in our context. Let's go a little further in 1 Kings, if you will, back to our storyline of Ben-Hadad and Ahab. Do you remember how he had spared Ben-Hadad? I've already mentioned that earlier in verses 31 to 34. He made a treaty with Ben-Hadad and he spared his life. So there was a prophet that disguised himself, the text tells us. And he comes out to meet the king and he pretends to be a soldier that had been given charge of a prisoner of war. So with that in context, notice verse 39. He comes to the king, and the king doesn't know this is a prophet. He thinks he's a soldier. He said, your servant went to battle. In the midst of the battle, there was a man who came over and brought a man to me and said, guard this man, and if by any means he's missing, your life shall be his for his life, or else you'll pay a talent of silver. So I was given this charge of a prisoner of war, and I was told that if something happened to him, my life would be taken for his life. And now notice, he said, now while your servant was busy here and there, he was gone. I let him get away. And he's waiting for the king's reaction. Here's what the king says. This is King Ahab. He said, so shall your judgment be. You yourself have decided it. In other words, you're responsible. You were given charge. You were given responsibility. And you didn't do what you were supposed to do. The prophet takes off his disguise and hastened to take off the bandage from his eyes. And the king recognized him as one of the prophets. And here's what he said. Because you let slip out of your hand the man whom I appointed to utter destruction, therefore your life shall go for his life. The same thing's going to happen to you that you just said should happen to the soldier that you thought you were talking to. You can see in others what you can't see often in yourselves. Let's give some examples of the very thing we're talking about. Maybe it's when other parents fail to teach their children. And we can see when others are failing to teach their children and they're not training them as they should. And they're not instructing them as they should. Maybe they're not teaching their Bible to them like they should. Or maybe they're not teaching them how to behave like they should. But we can't see that perhaps in ourselves when we're failing to do the very same thing. But we can easily identify it in others. Or maybe it's when one is dilatory in preparation for a Bible class. Brother so-and-so comes to class, and sister so-and-so, they don't come prepared. They're never prepared for a Bible class. They don't even know where the class begins. And yet maybe I hadn't really studied my lesson either. Or maybe we see that one's not devoting time to his family. He sure seems to neglect his family a lot. But it may be that I'm doing just as bad or worse. I can easily identify it in someone else what I may not be able to see in myself. Or I can sure identify when somebody's got a sour attitude, but I never notice that I have one. We can easily identify in others what we cannot see in ourselves. Here's the second thing I learned from this context. Let not the one who puts on the armor boast like the one who takes it off. That was the thing I've said. And I learned a lesson from that you can get excellent advice from the unwise. What do we mean by that? Well, I want to suggest to you that Ahab was very unwise. He was a wicked king, you remember. In fact, let's go to 1 Kings chapter 16. This is where we're introduced to him. We talked about this on the Lord's Day. In 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 29 and 30, that's where we're introduced to him first. But in verse 30, Ahab did more than all that were before him. He did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. That was very unwise. Look at verse 31. He married Jezebel, a pagan woman. That was very unwise. Verse 31 and 32. Because he had married her, he served Baal and worshipped them and set up an altar of Baal in the temple of Baal, which he built in Samaria. He turned to idolatry. That's very unwise. God had told him to kill Ben-Hadad. He spared Ben-Hadad. That was very unwise. Go to chapter 21, 1 Kings. You remember the story we talked about on the Lord's Day, how that he wanted Naboth's vineyard and he pouted because he couldn't get it, and then they killed Naboth and then he went and took his vineyard. That's very unwise. He was seizing property that did not belong to him. That's greedy. And yet, in spite of all the lack of wisdom, the proverb that he repeated was excellent advice. You'll have to agree with that. Let not him that puts on the armor boast like the one who takes it off. That's pretty good advice. You say, well, that came from a man that was a pagan, that he married a pagan, and he was greedy and he was selfish and he didn't obey God. That's true. It's absolutely true. But his proverb was pretty good, wasn't it? What I'm suggesting is don't discount the advice and the instruction just because the one giving it doesn't follow it in himself. Don't discount the advice and instruction just because the one who's giving it makes unwise choices. Sometimes that's pretty good advice. It is true that hypocrites have little influence. Let's go back to Romans 2, that context where the Jews were preaching to the Gentiles when they were doing the same thing. You're talking about a picture of hypocrisy. Don't you steal, but I'm stealing. Don't you commit adultery, but I'm committing adultery. He said, you make boast of the law. I'm reading at verse 23 of Romans chapter 2. And you dishonor God through the breaking of the law. The name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. What does that mean? The Gentiles look at the hypocrisy of the Jews and think, if that's the way the people of God are, I don't want to be a part of the people of God. I don't want to be in that fold. I don't want to be in that family. And that prevented them from coming in. And so it is true that hypocrites have little influence. It is true the unwise have little impact. But perhaps the reason their advice is good is they're blinded to themselves. Perhaps that was what was going on in Romans 2. They could easily see the adultery in the heart, in the mind or the life of the Gentile, but they couldn't see it in themselves. Or maybe they could see the idolatry in the Gentile, but they couldn't see they were committing sacrilege. Often they're blinded to themselves. And it may be the unwise is repeating advice they have heard, not what they've learned by experience. They may not know a thing about what they're talking about. They may be repeating a proverb they've heard. Don't discount advice and instruction because it comes from the unwise. Here's some advice you may hear from people who are unwise. You may hear advice about raising children and the dangers you need to avoid. When my children were small, I don't know what it was like when you were raising your children or are raising your children now, whatever the case may be. The people who offered the most advice to me were the ones who had done the worst with their children. They wanted to tell me how to discipline the children. They wanted to tell me how to shape my children and look around, and maybe they had five or six children, and every one of them had turned to the world. But they were offering me advice. And you know what? Their advice was pretty good. Some of it. Don't discount it because they didn't follow it. You may hear some advice about how to treat your mate, how to have a happy home. I've had people in Bible class speak up and say, well, I think what a husband should do. Yeah, that's good advice. I just wish you followed it, brother. And the elders wouldn't have to be dealing with your marriage. You may hear advice of how to deal with temptation. Here's what you need to do when you face temptation, and this is the one that keeps falling off the wagon all the time that's giving this advice to us. Or someone who's always in a conflict with others may offer the most advice of how to get along with other people. Or it may be how to approach Bible study. Here's how you need to study your Bible, and this is the person who can't seem to figure out basic text, but he's offering us advice. Or the one that offered the advice about you need to be careful what you say is the one who says more and gossips more than anybody. That doesn't mean the advice isn't good. We may discount it at times, but you can get excellent advice from the unwise. I learned that from this context. That's pretty good advice when someone says don't boast as you're putting on the armor like you do when you take it off. That's pretty good advice, I want to tell you. Here's the third thing I learned from this context. Be careful about saying what you will do. Isn't that the point of the proverb? Go back to 1 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 11. Read again. Let not the one who puts on his armor boast like the one who takes it off. So learn from that. We need to be careful about what we say we will do. I want to suggest to you, Peter was careless in that. We're going to come to this passage again, and we've come to it already several times in this series of studies. But Matthew chapter 26, beginning at verse 31, Peter said, remember what he said he would do? He said, I will die for you. That's what I will do. That's what I'm going to do. I'll die for you. Be careful about saying what you will do. You're boasting before you put on the armor. You're boasting before the battle is over. Let's talk about the circumstance of careless claims. Sometimes it may be, like the proverb is suggesting, that those who newly put on the armor are making the boast. They think their strength is greater than what it really is. He's just putting on the armor. He hadn't fought the battle yet. He hadn't been in a battle yet. But he's putting on his armor. And he thinks his strength is greater than what it really is. He may think he's more capable than he really is. His confidence is running high. We'll get some evidence of that in a moment. But another circumstance under which one may boast, and that is when they've won one battle and they're assured the next one's going to be just as easy or easier. Example, children of Israel took Jericho, easily fell. They're confident it's all going to go well at Ai. It didn't go too well at Ai. They weren't ready for the next battle. Sometimes we boast. Talk about some areas where we might not be careful. Those of my generation, I'm younger than those who fought the battle of institutionalism. At the time I began to preach, that battle was the dust was settled on that issue. And those of my generation and younger sometimes are quite critical of those who fought those battles, how they would have handled it, because they handled it all wrong. I tell you what I would have done if I was in those days. I tell you what I wouldn't have done. Be careful about what you say if you hadn't been there. Be careful. Be careful. You're boasting before you put on the armor. Maybe you hadn't fought those battles. Maybe you hadn't fought those fights. You weren't in the thick of it like those brethren were. Quite often, someone who doesn't have any children. I tell you what, when I have children, they're going to walk the line. Be careful. Be careful. None of my children will ever do that. My children will never misbehave. My children are going to toe the line. Don't boast when you're putting on the armor. It's better to boast when you're taking it off. How many young people have said, when I get married, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. My husband will do this. And I'll tell you what, no wife of mine will ever. You ever heard that? You haven't put on the armor yet. You don't know how it's going to turn out. Tell me how that turns out. Or maybe someone says, I tell you what, when I get out on my own, a young person, when I get out on my own and out from under my parents' authority, when I get out on my own, this is what I'm going to do and here's how I'm going to live. You ain't got no battle yet. You're putting on your armor. You don't know what you're going to do. Or if I were in charge, well, I'll tell you what, if I was an elder, here's what we'd do. This church would be different if I was in the leadership position. I'll tell you, that's what I'd do. Danger is we could easily be embarrassed later. Peter was. You remember Peter saying, I'll die for you. And when he heard the cock crow the second time, he remembered the words of the Lord. Remember that? Ben-Hadad was embarrassed. His life was spared, that's true. The battle didn't go too well. He was boasting before the battle. Here's something else I learned. Very closely connected with that, but it's a distinct point. Listen carefully. Not only do we need to be careful about saying what we will do, we need to be careful about saying what we will never do. Go back to our text, 1 Samuel chapter, 1 Kings chapter 20 and verse 11. Let not the one who puts on his armor boast like the one who takes it off. You need to be very careful about what you say you'll never do. Peter was careless in that regard. Go back to Matthew 26. He did say what he would do. He did say something about, I will die for you. But there were two things he said he would never do. I will never stumble, he said. I'll never do that. Everybody else may, but not me. And Jesus said, well, you'll even deny me three times this night. I will never deny you, he said. But he did. Galatians chapter 6 perhaps comes to play here, that when what is overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. That is, I go to the brother who is enwrapped in the sin, whatever that sin may be, and I don't approach him like I would never do what you did. I approach him with the attitude, you might need to bail me out of that same problem later, and so I'm approaching you like one who would want to be approached in the same manner. Because I may be in that sin next time, and it may be you talking to me. That's the idea of considering yourself. Here's some areas wherein we may be careless. I've heard brethren say to others, I would never do what you did. I may sin, but I tell you what, I would never do what you did. What you did was terrible, and I would never do that. Some brother acknowledges the sin of fornication or adultery of some sister, and someone is sure to say, I tell you what, I would never do that. Be very careful. You don't know. Don't boast before you battle. You don't know. Or someone may say, I tell you what, I would never look at the things you've looked at. I know you've got a problem and you're wrapped up in this temptation of looking at things you shouldn't, but I would never do that. Really? Don't boast before the battle. You might be tempted to do that someday. Or I may have a problem in my life and I may sin, but I tell you what, I'd never lose my temper like you do. I would never do that. Have you been through the battle? You might lose your temper someday. Don't boast before the battle. Well, let's close by looking at this. The one who has the armor, who puts on the armor, has more to do than to boast. One who's putting on the armor is getting ready for battle. He's got more to do than boast. Can you imagine a soldier getting ready to go to fight in our day and time, and he's putting on all of his gear, putting on his helmet, getting his rifle all loaded, and he's got more to do now than to go boasting about how it's going to turn out. One who may be boasting, it may be because they have little else to do. The one who puts on the armor has a battle to fight. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. I just want to make a passing reference to Ephesians 6. Time would fail us to go in depth in Ephesians 6. But Ephesians chapter 6 is a passage talking about putting on the whole armor of God and equipping ourselves to fight against the wiles of the devil. Look at verse 11. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And as we equip ourselves, what we're doing is that we're battling against Satan, and we're fighting against his wiles, against his schemes, and against his goals and his efforts. And we're taking with us the helmet of salvation, and we're taking with us the sword of the Spirit. My point of that is we're putting on this armor. We have a battle to fight. We have sin to fight against. We have error to fight against. We have temptation to deal with. We've got more to do than to be boasting about how things are going to go. What I would never do. Just be fighting your battle. One who puts on the armor has a marriage to build. Ephesians 5, back up one chapter. Where husbands are to love their wives, even as Christ also loved the church. And how the husband is to be the head of the wife. And how the wife is to see, verse 33, that she reverences her husband and respects her husband. Instead of bragging about what you would never do in your marriage, you've got a marriage to build. You've got a husband to be, and you've got a wife to be, and you've got a marriage to build and a family to build. You've got children, Ephesians chapter 6, 1 to 4, to train and to teach and to discipline, to bring them up in the nurture and the training of the Lord. Instead of bragging about what your children will never do, you've got a job to do of getting busy and rearing and training your children and disciplining them and teaching them. You've got souls to instruct. The Great Commission of Mark 16, verse 15, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, was given to each and every one of us as individuals. We've got work to do. We're putting on our armor. We've got a battle to fight. We've got souls to instruct. And we've got brethren to encourage. Instead of boasting about what we may never do, maybe we can go and encourage the brethren and strengthen their hands in the righteousness. And go encourage someone else and strengthen their hand in what they're doing. And lift someone up who has fallen, encouraging them in the spirit of meekness, considering ourselves lest we also be tempted. Let's go back one more time to our text in 1 Kings chapter 20 and in verse 11. Ben-Hadad boasted here in our text. Ben-Hadad boasted, but I'm going to wipe you off the map, basically. And I'm paraphrasing verse 10. And Ahab said, don't be so confident. He said this at verse 11. Let not the one who puts on his armor boast like the one who takes it off. That's good advice, isn't it? And I learned several things from that. I learned how easy we can see things in others that we can't see in ourselves. That was the case of Ahab. And I learned that you can get excellent advice from people who are the most unwise. Ahab wasn't very wise. He's a very wicked king. But that's pretty good advice. You'd have to admit that. And I learned how we need to be careful about saying what we will do. And we need to be careful about saying what we would never do. Don't boast when you're putting on the armor like you do when you can take it off. And the one who's putting on armor has more to do than to brag and to boast about what they will or will not do. Just do the job, fighting the battle. And then when the battle's won, and you take the armor off, then you might have reason to say, here's what I did. Versus bragging about what you're going to do, like Ben-Hadad did. There may be one or more present this evening who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come this evening believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins and acknowledge the faith that you have in the Lord Jesus Christ and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come all together we stand and while we sing?